The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of H2O. We have survived our turkey comas, our tryptophan trips.
Speak for yourself. I'm still in one.
Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we're going to talk spoilers this week.
Spoilers.
Not any specific spoilers per se, but more the idea of spoilers. And this comes in the wake of AMC Network ruining the experience for the West Coast and the international audience for The Walking Dead. Because after the East Coast feed, about 5 minutes, I mean, it wasn't even 5 minutes, that they posted a photograph of a character holding a dead character with a tweet. R.I.P. character name. I'm not going to spoil it because some people may have missed it. It's still possible.
It is possible. This is true.
So this is the mid-season finale. This is a pretty big event. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, of course, something rather big happens in the story. And it's one of those things that the audience goes, I can't believe they just did that.
Number one show on television, et cetera. I mean, it's the kind of thing that an audience can get kind of upset about.
And they did.
Yes.
Quite a bit. And they're still reeling from it. And I saw a headline, and I didn't get a chance to read it yet because I've been swamped on other things. But apparently AMC has come out with an apology.
Sure.
Saying, oops.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know, I think part of that comes down to, and you and I have talked about this before, it's the instant. It's everything can happen so fast.
And I wonder how much of that is the 24-hour news cycle. It has to be, you know, we've got to be, you know, the latest now. Or if it's more, if it's broader than that culturally.
Well, I think part of it could simply be the fact that if you broadcast something, it's kind of like, well, we're all watching it together, right?
Yeah.
We're all watching it at the same time, right?
And tweeting about it.
At the same time. Well, the reality is not always, because we still have this crazy thing called time zones. it's literally the kind of thing that because everything is so instant, because we can all go to the internet and tweet at each other immediately, or we can all watch the same video online, broadcast television isn't quite like that.
Well, unless you get some kind of an event like the Doctor Who 50th anniversary, which was broadcast at the same time worldwide. Uh-huh. But that's such a coordinated thing. You can't do that all the time.
No, you can't. And I think that you run into the problem that when you have a big event with a show that is, you know, touting the fact that it's the number one show on television, et cetera, you know, it becomes a thing where everything you do is about promoting that. Quite understandably, AMC should be doing that.
Sure. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, you get to the end of the episode and airing, and then you sit there and immediately go and just you want to give the fans that extra bit.
Mm-hmm.
Except.
Well, and the thing I'm looking at, and this is just off the top of my head, just off the cuff. It's not a refined thought at all. But if somebody were to come up with a way to monetize, and that's what it's going to come down to, is money, to figure out how you can either simulcast certain shows both on your network, whether it's cable or broadcast, and the internet. There's got to be Time Warner Cable has a viewing app where if you're a Time Warner Cable customer, you can download an app and you can watch TV. You can watch your cable channels on your Kindle or your iPad or your mobile device.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So what I'm seeing is, at some point, is somebody at the network is going to go, hey, what if, let's say, AMC comes in with The Walking Dead, and for the season finale, they say, okay, well, not only are we going to run it on AMC Network, but we're also going to stream it live at the same time.
Sure.
So worldwide, everybody could see it all at once at the same time, like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take less coordination than, say, a Doctor Who 50th anniversary with so many different channels worldwide.
Well, sure, you're putting
affiliates.
Yeah, well, not only that, you're doing it in the movie theater for something like the Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So, well, honestly, I don't know why we aren't pushing closer to the online streaming it, because more people are watching it.
Because they haven't figured out how to make money on it yet. And
well,
that's the thing. That's the golden goose. If somebody could figure out how, and you know, I'm in that boat too, because we've sat and talked about how do we come up with a way to put video content and become a channel of our own.
For a network, though, when you've already got your advertisers there, you just put the same ads on the online streaming. You do the same thing. They're buying ad space.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, people watching it online don't want the ads. One of the reasons why you've got so many cord cutters is because there's not that many advertisements in the
show.
Yeah,
but if you're going to do something like, you know...
I mean, you got pre-roll and stuff.
Well, sure, but I mean, if you're going to do something like... But that's it. If you're going to simulcast it online as well as on network, then you're going to have holes where the commercials go online because otherwise it's not simulcast.
Right.
So... you sell ad space online, and I don't know what your equation would be, and basically
that would be interesting to see how that worked out.
If you're the audience, you're going to have to suck it up. I mean, that's just the way it's going to work. And
well, and I think at some point we're going to get to the stage where the broadcast model, as it is now, changes just a little bit to be a little bit more resembling what's online.
Sure.
And the online model is going to move the other direction and become more like a broadcast or a cable outlet with more advertising. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to monetize this.
Well, that's always been the problem with online entertainment is figuring out the monetization. I mean, we've got, you know, our friend Kendall, who may be as far as we can tell, pretty much invented the web series years and years ago with his Shadowfall series. One of the issues that he ran into way back when, and we're talking like a decade ago, was that how do you make money?
Yeah.
And no one has actually solved this problem.
Now, there are things like the Guild, which gets sponsorships, like you know, sponsored by Microsoft or whatever like that. But, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry making a web series in their basement, like we might...
Yeah.
They're not going to sit there and be able to go to Microsoft and say, hey, you don't know us, but give us money.
Now, there are some interesting new models that are emerging for things. You know, you have your Kickstarters, and you've got your Patreons, and you've got your various funding mechanisms that might help. I think some of it you see, maybe the model we're seeing for webcomics, things like, you know, Goblins or Sluggy Freelance or Penny Arcade, where basically you can help contribute to funding the webcomic. And in some cases, it's made some of these people actually be able to devote their entire life to making the comic.
Yeah.
Which is a win-win for them and for the audience, because it means you've got more content for, you know, the viewer. But at the same time, you know, how effective will that go for, you know, generating...
Well, and the other thing, too, is if you do something like that, how much of it would you lose, you know, in terms of support, financial support, if you make the mistake that AMC did, blowing the gag early and say, oops.
Well, it's...
online, it'd be a little bit different thing, but still, people are, you know... If you watch a TV show, you know, nowadays, the Nielsen, you've got the Nielsen numbers, you've got the live numbers, and now you get live plus 3 and you get live plus 7, which people are still, you know, they're recording it on their DVR, they're recording it to watch the next day or a couple of days later, so you get your live plus 3 numbers.
Sure.
And then you've got some people that are watching it at least a week out.
Or they're waiting until the season it comes out on DVD or Netflix and they binge watch.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when I was a boy, but, you know, and Jason and I talk about this a lot. You know, we do. We talk about the fact that because we've watched the television model change dramatically from when we were a kid, because we actually remember the old Big Three in PBS. And in some respects, the change from that to cable and the change from cable to the internet, they're not equivalent, but they're equivalent. Because
they're not dissimilar.
Right, because it's a pretty seismic shift in how we consume entertainment. But remember, back then, you didn't get a chance to watch it again until the summer.
Right.
Because then it was
reruns when the season was over.
Right, and so you didn't.
Or if they had to fill a hole.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, watch it again.
Wait, this episode's not ready. Put the pilot back in.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. Well, even back as late as the 90s when Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Firefly,
sure.
Any of those, where you know there's an episode that wasn't ready or they didn't or the network doesn't like this particular episode, they'll rerun one of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. So I think that it's. But again, so the model has changed in terms of, you know, the ability to watch something again immediately or watch something 2 days later. Maybe you could tape it if you could afford a VHS player.
Mm, which back then were like $400.
Well, yeah, or you could rent one for like $50.
Yeah. Do you remember when Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List ran on NBC?
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of the first times that a network ran something with limited commercial interruptions. You remember that?
Yeah.
And that was such a big deal because it was sponsored by Ford.
Right.
And everybody went, huh? Because you didn't get all of the commercial breaks that you normally get and that are even worse now that people are always complaining, why didn't you go to a commercial? Why didn't you go to a commercial? You know, I mean, half of Twitter blows up every time Arrow goes to a commercial. Wait, you know, leave me hanging. No, wait.
And at least episodic television still recognizes that you have to basically have your, for the most part, recognize that this is the point. This is the
your
pause
five,
point.
Yeah, you got to have a 5-act structure.
Yeah. So.
Well, and the other thing, you know, we talk about Twitter, and you know, we do our share of live tweeting during the shows. Mm-hmm. You know, Curtis does. You know, Curtis and Amory do it during Walking Dead.
Okay. Curtis's tweet on the last Walking Dead just blew
up.
Oh,
I know. Abe to the rescue. And well, the Walking Dead channel retweeted it, and suddenly it's just all over the place, which is great for us.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. And you get Dan getting really good response in his live tweets for Once Upon a Time.
Sure.
But at the same time, I sit there and, you know, and I've been guilty of it too, because I'll live tweet sometimes during Gotham or, you know, or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We'll talk about stuff. And I think, what has happened to us as a society where we can't just watch something anymore? It all has to be interactive. And it makes me think of some old Heinlein stories that everything's all, you know, there's too much. There's too much clutter. There's too much chatter. There's too much back and forth in the internet. You can't enjoy something anymore without it. And some people say it gives you a sense of community.
Right.
Okay, fine. But at the same time, if I've got all of this social media feed going through and I haven't seen the show yet, and suddenly this thing pops up in my feed.
Right.
And you're just like, Moffat! You know, it's that Moffat hate that shows up. You know, the spoilers that are out there. And people say, well, you shouldn't be on internet. You shouldn't be on the social media if you haven't seen it yet. Well, you know.
Well, but at the same time, you know, talking about live tweeting, okay, you know, to some degree, that is a choice you make to be part of that thing, that experience, right?
Right. But if you're live tweeting, then the assumption is that you're actually watching the show.
Well, right. And
during that time.
In which case, buyer beware, viewer beware.
Right.
Twitter follower, use the words. Twitter follower beware. I mean, because honestly, if you're going to sit there and read the, you know, read somebody's tweets and they sit there and get the spoiler, why are you reading their tweets? Well, you're guess what? Which actually kind of raises the question: is do we want spoilers in a way we didn't used to want spoilers? I mean, does it bother people in the same way?
I think it depends on what it is that we're spoiling, because for us, you know, with us doing this kind of thing, you know, blogging and podcasting and journalism and whatnot, we get access to several things ahead of time.
Sure.
And the balance that you have to find and reporting on things also comes into, well, we have this information, but how much of this information would actually spoil what people don't know yet in terms of the story, or is this just a production note, or it's a casting note, or whatever? And it's funny, last week we got word about the Star Wars teaser.
Right.
This is a classic example for me, because my internal debate is always, it's always the struggle between the journalist blogger side and the fan. And when the Star Wars teaser came out, we got the list of the theaters, and I thought, oh, it's going to be here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
We're going to find a theater. We're going to go. I'm going to take James, because this is something you see on the screen first.
Right.
And then we got the announcement that it was going to be released on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeing it pop up. It's leaked. You know, somebody took a camera phone in, and here it is. And I was like, and I almost. And I thought to myself, nope. I'm not going to do it. And when it was released on iTunes, I said, I'm not going to look. I'm going to see it in the theater first.
Well, and I think there's a couple of things, because, you know, a significant portion of the It's Leaked ones were fake.
Yes.
Which is a whole cottage industry now. I mean, it's kind of as the thing is like...
It's either a fake one or it's a Swede one.
Right. <You know? laughs> Or you've been Rickrolled again.
Yeah, you know, so, that one.
But there's this interesting thing, and you see it periodically. I mean, I come across some of these because I think it was a couple of years ago I went looking for, I know what it was, back before Man of Steel came out.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of quote-unquote leaked trailers, right? And some of them were really, really effective. I mean, the editing was really good. All right, just give them credit. The editing was really good. But it was Superman footage from various Superman films. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think there was even something from Lois and Clark in there. So I mean, it was but it was really effective. Or there was Justice League trailer leaks or all these things, and you look and go, oh, these are really effective kind of things. But there's people who are out there going, no, this is the real thing. Like, no, it's not.
Yeah,
this is the real thing. No, really, it's not. I can tell you, it's not. But so there's just because there's people out there who either. You know, they recognize there's a desire to see these things ahead of time.
Yeah.
To get the, can I see it first? Can I see
it first?
Yeah.
Or, well, it's like in the old days, the comment boards. First.
Oh, God. That's,
first.
That still happens.
First.
That still happens. Go, you know, it's I cannot recommend going to political websites just because they're often dark and terrifying places full of the worst of humanity, but they're also sometimes hysterical and cool. But there's inevitably somebody who sits there and goes, it's the first post. It's like, seriously, are we 12?
Well, most of the internet is 12.
This is true.
Most of the internet is perpetually 12.
On average, did you hear about that? Did you hear about that Australian female game reviewer?
No.
She's like 21 years old.
No.
And she was getting, and of course, this is she was getting
part
raped.
Of Gamergate?
Yeah. Well, she was getting rape threats. Well, she figured out, because she's a computer person, she was able to find out how old some of these people were. She called their mother.
She tweeted
their mother.
I saw the headlines on that, but I didn't read it.
I heard an interview with her today. That wonderful Aussie accent sitting there. And she's like, so, I said, so when you spoke to the mother, because what she'd do is she'd tweet them saying, you know, I've had this interaction with your son and it concerns me if you'd like to discuss it. You know, she very
sure.
Neutral. She wasn't going to be accusatory. So the first one mom who called her sat there and went, she goes, well, what happened? And she told her. And she goes, that little beep! And it just went from there. Kid got banned from the internet. Kid got banned from his game consoles. She called the mom called the kid's friend's parents. They got the school involved.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like,
and this goes back to an even bigger, and this is not even a genre related thing or a political thing or anything. It's, I don't want to say the breakdown of the family, but the idea that values don't matter as much as they used to. I mean, we're seeing this in Ferguson. You know, the respect for the other person is just gone. And we talked about it, you know, as far as the internet and online and the anonymity and all this other mess that we get. Nobody respects the other person anymore.
Well, I think I've been thinking about
it. We don't know our neighbors. We don't interact with people. We don't get along. And there's not, whether you want to assign a religious component to it or not, the moral aspects of the do unto others rule, show respect to your neighbor, be nice, be polite, and that's
sure.
That's gone.
Well, I think I've been thinking about this because, and again, this comes out of so many things that we've talked about versus, we Jason and I are of an age where we've lived through so much of this. And
we're old.
We're not old. We're older. But we've seen so much of this stuff change, because when we were teenagers, we didn't have the internet. And now we do. And so but what's interesting is that, I think part of this is adapting culturally. Mm-hmm. Because what we have is a generation of parents who don't realize they have to pay attention to what their kids are doing online. Because the internet is a amazing world of temptation.
It's a cesspool.
At the fingertips of children. And there was
brain development, they have absolutely no control over themselves whatsoever.
Well, and I know
some grown-ups like that.
Well,
too.
Sure, but there was an interesting study by a guy. I can't remember what his name is, but he's a major, major psychologist, hugely involved. He's actually the guy, one of the guys who got the death penalty for juveniles banned by the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
So, this guy knows from whence he speaks. He says that chemically, biologically, adolescence stops at like 25.
Right. Because your prefrontal cortex, you're still developing.
And so what happens is you've got the internet and all of these things.
And it's shiny.
It's shiny and it's made of candy. And it's full of boobs. I'm serious. This is
on both sides.
Exactly. That's right. And so you have the children in a candy store. There's nothing to rein them in. Now, I'm not saying that every parent should be leaning over their kid's shoulder while they're online, but there's a difference. I think there's a different mindset that we haven't got to yet.
Yeah.
We haven't adapted because the thing is that a lot of these parents are you're in my age. It's the world they're not used to.
The generation following ours, my kids' generation.
It's going to have a whole different...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this goes back, and I don't know if your experience was the same way. When I was a kid, my parents had people over to the house for dinner and for, playing dominoes and, those kind of things. There were friends that came over on a semi-regular basis. There were social occasions at the house. And sometimes it was at our house, and sometimes we went to somebody else's house.
Right.
And, all the kids went out in the backyard, and we all played and did, whatever, while the parents are playing with, dominoes and playing cards and whatever. And that's – I don't know that happens as much anymore. But it also we've kind of strayed off. But the Kevin Smith talks about being our age, back in the day, when we didn't have the internet, we didn't have all this information just immediately at our fingertips,
right?
And from a societal standpoint, I think I don't want to sound like the old man in the room with the whole get off my lawn type, but I think there is more potential for harm than for good in a general sense for the internet. Not only from the standpoint of spoilers and that kind of thing from an entertainment aspect of it, but from a societal and a moral and a developmental thing where, it is like you're talking about, it is shiny and full of candy, and there are so many different things out there that ruin us. And, spoilers are just tip of the iceberg with some of that stuff, but you see the reactions to spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Just to kind of bring it back on topic, but it's all part of the same thing. It's all of a piece.
Sure.
The reactions to things like Ferguson or a satire piece, in, you know, pick your publication, The Onion or what, you know, National Review or wherever, mm-hmm. you know, the reactions in the comments on both sides of anything, whether it's a spoiler or it's a political thing or a religious thing or just whatever.
Have you noticed that we have basically...
Rude.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you noticed that we've basically... The art of satire seems to be lost.
Gone. It's gone.
I mean, there are some really, really funny things out there. And I like dark humor. I really do. So The Onion is a particularly... Mm-hmm. I'm particularly fond of it because they will go places you're like, oh, my God, they went there. That's hysterical. I can never repeat that.
Did you see the interview with Chris Rock? Frank Rich talked to Chris Rock, and I don't remember.
Oh, the actual real interview?
Yeah.
Where
he's talking about he didn't play colleges anymore.
Yeah.
So, because they are so uptight, they get offended at everything. Hmm. So nothing's funny anymore to that. And you talk about generational thing. Those people have been taught that nothing is funny. Everything is offensive.
Well, I think the part of the problem is, well, you have the instant information, right?
Mm-hmm.
You also have the... And of course, if my kid listens to this, but the thing is that when you're in your early 20s, when you're in your college age,
they know everything.
You know everything, and yep. you know it. And I was exactly the same way.
Oh, I was too.
I'll admit it. There were many, many certainties in my life. I had a much more black and white version of the world, and now there's my life has a lot more grays in it.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that I'm a lot more forgiving.
Mine's mostly white.
Yeah, it's a little more gray. I'm a lot more forgiving of other people's of disagreeing with other people.
Yeah.
Than I wouldn't. I mean, I didn't. Do I still get angry when I think someone's being a moron? Of course I do. But I'm not likely to sit there and assume that just because they disagree with me,
yeah,
they're a moron
or post
or they're
online
terrible.
You moron.
Exactly. You yeah. know. Well, and the thing is that you know I. I learned how to be a letter writer before I learned how to type anything, to be honest. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a terrible typist. But it's you know, I'm...
Handwriting is a lost art.
Well, it is a lost art. And I get it. I get that it's evolved. I mean, you go back 100 years, handwriting was different. You go back 100 years before that, it's, you know, it, yeah. everything changes, okay?
Sure.
The idea that, you know... And this is something, unfortunately, we see this too, because as much as we're sitting there painting this as with a lot of negatives, the reality is this is what humanity does. We change, mm-hmm. and culture changes, and it goes on. And a lot of times it gets really rocky, and sometimes it gets really, really cool. Trust me, when radio came out, there were people going, it's the end of the world! Because it's, you
well,
know,
movies are the death of television.
Exactly. Or, yeah. you know, so, I mean,
the internet's the death of everything.
So the reality yeah. is that we're going to adapt, and we're going to see, and you know, the amazing film, the stuff that emerged in terms of the art, film, creating art,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to see that, you know, it's going to take a little while, because now everybody's got a voice. And on one hand, that's really, really cool. On the other hand, the problem is that the loudest people
yeah.
are the worst ones.
Well, and I think really, you know, the idea of, I was reading finally getting around to reading the biography of Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
And talking about how Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog came out of his frustrations because of the writer's strike.
Right.
At the time. And this idea of doing well with, like, Cabin in the Woods or Much Ado About Nothing, where he basically becomes his own micro studio
right.
to do this little movie. And when you've got that kind of thing and the distribution model that he had and the marketing model that they had,
sure.
you know, all of it being, you know, the online and the community and the fans and the discussion boards and, mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. You're right. We are adapting in terms of, you know, what the internet does to us and for us and with us and all mm-hmm. of that. But it doesn't seem like we've gotten a handle on how to deal with information that's available before we want it.
We haven't,
some people are, you know, don't get on the internet. Well, that's all fine and well and good, but
right.
as much as the internet drives us now, it's kind of hard to do that.
Well, and you know, there's an interesting emotional evolution aspect to it, we haven't evolved to not be terrible on the internet yet.
I don't think we ever will. No. I think the anonymity of the internet will always give us that escape into...
Well, that's okay. Net neutrality will go away, and then none of us will be anonymous ever again. But at the same time, we have to learn how to police ourselves better. I mean, the reality is that we do have a responsibility to ourselves to not look at the things we don't want to be not looking at.
Right.
I mean, you have to bear in mind that, it's your computer.
So, yeah, well, that's something I keep telling my 12-year-old. Self-control.
Well, sure.
You're in charge of what you do.
You know.
You make choices. I'm trying to get that early because I know he's got no self-control up here because his brain isn't there yet.
Right. Well, I think that, it's like for kids, you want to put parental controls on your internet. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there's parental controls on cell phones. You can do it. You can take care of that sort of thing. Do we need to put some sort of spoiler control on, someone needs to build an app where you can sit there and go, the word spoiler immediately I can't look at anything with the word spoiler attached.
Well, see, and I got to thinking about it today with the whole Walking Dead thing. We can get into some different ways of dealing with spoilers when we get out of the break. But one of the things that I was thinking about is, with food falling on the floor, there's a 5-second rule.
Sure.
Those kind of things. Why can't we have a 24-hour rule or a 12-hour rule on spoilers? I'd be perfectly fine with no spoilers for 12 hours. Because how many people post online, I don't want to see any spoilers. I'm logging off. I'm getting out of the internet.
You don't just see that in genre stuff. You see that in someone taping
everywhere.
Well, someone's taping a football game.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, don't tell me how the fourth quarter goes.
Don't tell me.
But the thing is that 24 hours, you go when we were watching network TV as kids, you go to school the next day.
Yeah.
You didn't watch the episode. Forget about it. You were hearing about it. No one's going to sit there and do,
Yeah. Well,
did you see what happened on the finale of V?
Same as going to work in the water cooler.
Exactly.
Water cooler. Did you see Seinfeld last night?
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, last night on Friends. All right. Speaking of Friends, we do have some at superherostuff.com.
They have many cool things
there. They've been doing a sale over Black Friday weekend, and I'm sure they've got some stuff coming up for Christmas promotions. I haven't heard from Micah yet what the next thing is going to be, but all through December, I'm sure that they're going to have some different
things. Oh, I don't doubt it.
Just go to superherostuff.com. They are also on Facebook and Twitter, as are we. And we are going to take a break, let you hear from them. And when we come back, we're going to talk about ideas for how we deal with spoilers when H2O continues.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Podcasting, the fandom frontier. These are the voyages of Sci-Fi for Chicks, our continuing mission to explore strange new topics, to seek out new fantasy and new science fiction, to boldly go where no man has gone before, because face it, guys just don't get it. Girls can be geeks too. Tune in for the woman's POV on genre entertainment, geek culture, and anything else we want to talk about. Subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks on iTunes, and follow us on Twitter. As part of the Sci-Fi for Me radio network, Sci-Fi for Chicks is proud to be your feminist portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me radio. To unsubscribe would be a violation of the Prime Directive. You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
back on H2O. Jason Hunt and Timothy Harvey here, and we are talking spoilers. And now, how to deal with spoilers.
Well, you can't put the person who did the spoiling up against the wall and shoot them. That is considered impolite and doesn't actually solve the problem. I know, it's tempting. Yeah. Well, and I think the question that we have is, well, first of all, we're never going to be able to avoid them. Okay. Everything has changed with the 24-hour news cycle, with the instant information.
Now.
I was almost like, but the thing is that, you know, because when we were kids, yeah, and through our teenage years, really, you know, the magazine format, the actual physical magazine format, and the physical genre magazine format was a thing.
Yeah, Starlog magazine,
Fangoria. These are the big genre magazines. Yep. If you got a spoiler, it's because they gave it to you. I mean, the studio gave it to you, the filmmaker gave it to you, the writer gave it to you, and it was usually like, I'm going to give you a spoiler. You know, it was a big deal. It was a thing.
It's insider trading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you weren't reading Starlog or you weren't reading Omni, remember Omni?
I do.
When you remember,
they're actually talking. It was funny you should mention that, because I was talking to Ellen Datlow.
Yeah.
Who is an editor over at Tor now?
Right.
She's been she's won all sorts of awards for editing genre fiction all over the place, and she got approached. She started telling me she got approached a while back by a group that's looking to restart Omni magazine. And now, there's Omni Reboot,
right,
which is online. Mm-hmm. But according to Ellen Datlow, that's not the original Omni magazine people. They're just taking up the cause, as it were.
Right.
And doing, you know, like an Omni 2.0 type of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas the people that approached her are wanting to bring back the original Omni magazine in some way, shape, or form.
Wow.
So that would be interesting to
see. That would be very interesting to see.
Well, and we also got word that Fangoria was going to relaunch Starlog.
Right.
Now, we haven't seen anything from that yet, and I actually sent them an email, was it 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when we first heard that news, mm-hmm, 2 months ago, I guess maybe it was, where I said, hey, if you ever need any help,
right,
wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and I heard, thanks, we'll let you know.
We haven't heard anything else.
No.
So I think that, well, so I mean, it's in some respect, go ahead.
I mentioned insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
That's illegal.
Well, yes.
And it's punishable.
Well, yeah, okay.
Fines and prison time.
I don't think you're not going to get a law passed that says if you commit a spoiler on The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones Star Wars picture.
Here's what we do. Okay.
Yeah.
This new group. Now we've seen this, and I don't want anybody to take this to be facetious or not, but I think it's just absolutely ridiculous what they're doing. This group that's come together and does this hashtag racist to be fired or get racist fired or whatever.
I don't know this one.
They are basically scouring the internet for any kind of comment that, if taken out of context, could be presented as a racist comment. How dare you type thing, mm-hmm, you know, that. And they are in their moral outrage, they are contacting the employers of these people.
Oh.
And saying, I'm not going to do business with you, XYZ company, because your employee Z over here said this on Twitter about this. I'm like, huh? What? But it's a thing now. There's a group on Facebook that's like 100,000 people strong, and you can actually, it's thought police, mm-hmm, is what this is. And let's say, say you make a comment about Tyrese on Walking Dead,
mm-hmm,
all right? Or the fact that you say, you know, because you and Dustin have commented on the fact that a lot of times The Walking Dead will take their token black character and kill them off.
Oh yeah, as soon as you introduce a black character, the other one's dead. Figure out which one is going to get killed. Yeah.
Well, this group, if they stay true to form, this group would take that completely out of context,
mm-hmm,
make you out to be a racist, and they would contact scififorme.com and say, hey, we're not going to do business with you. We're not going to read your magazine because you've got a racist on your staff, and you should fire him.
Right.
Basically. And I'm thinking, well, you know, we're in 1984.
Well, but the thing is,
but it got me thinking.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's turn it around.
Yeah.
And if you post a spoiler, let's out you as a spoilerist.
There we go.
Right?
Well, okay, but here's well, yeah, it's the problem is that it works both ways. Everything in, you know, Should egregious acts of, well, just acts of racism be pointed out? Yes. Should things be taken out of context and used as a weapon? No, of course not.
Well, yeah, and in this particular case, these guys are spoiling for a fight. I mean, that's,
right, exactly.
That's
well,
that
that's it, and there's certainly that there's that again that subset of the internet which is just angry apparently,
yeah,
with everybody or anything.
Well, and I, you know, we've talked about this before. There's an entire cottage industry built around being offended.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
At something,
mm-hmm. And I think that
whether it's perceived or real,
you know,
it's,
you
I'm going to choose to be offended, and how dare you be that way?
Right. Well, I think you know we should. I'm actually much more concerned about stamping out, you know, racism than I am stamping out spoilers. But it would probably be the world would be a lot better place. I think we could all get along
I think
if spoilers were our biggest issue.
Yeah, I think they're both lost causes.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, you're probably right. But
see, the thing about it is when we do spoilers,
we at least warn people.
We've got, you know, especially when we're doing recaps, we've got these little icons at the very beginning of all of our recaps that said, there's spoilers here.
But you know what?
We've got the sounder, and we've got all of this stuff that says, hey, there's spoilers coming.
Right.
Yeah. But you don't, that's a completely different thing from comments in, you know, in the comment threads and the discussion boards and Twitter and all that other stuff. You can't do spoiler warning, and it takes up half of your 140 characters. You know?
Well, but for your bulletin boards, gosh, remember bulletin boards? These things are still here. Discussion boards are still around.
Reddit.
Yeah, well, and I mean, they still have forums where you can go and have these conversations. They still have these things.
Yeah,
there are fan sites for specific shows that are basically just forums for people to have these discussions.
Well, Doctor Who's got one where spoilers are allowed.
Right.
But it's understood going into it that the discussion is going to include spoilers. You don't have that, you know, you are making the choice to dive into spoiler territory in certain areas.
Periodically, I see this because I can't remember what it was some IO9 article where the headline.
Why are you reading IO9?
Same reason you read IO9, because we have
checking out the competition.
That's right. So, that's right. But you sit there and you go, you know, I can't remember what it was, but the headline was, you know, this is the thing that happened, and the article is the thing that happened in detail, and then somewhere in the comments, someone's going, "Thanks for the spoiler, Charlie Jane," and it's like, seriously, did you not read the headline?
I mean, the headline was a spoiler. See, that's what gets me is when the headline is the spoiler.
Well, but
that's even more egregious than putting a spoiler in the article and not warning people. Because if you put a spoiler in the headline, even if you don't read the article, you see the headline, the spoiler's there, and you're done.
Well, also remember, and this is, we've talked about headlines. We've talked about clickbait headlines before,
that Cinema Blend, we're looking at you.
That horrible realization that for a lot of these places, not us, because we're smaller.
No, it's because we're smarter and more controlled.
Well, but the thing is that we actually, you know, when the head of the, you know, the title of the article, you know, the Walking Dead articles, I write those headlines. I write those titles.
Right.
You know, I come up with the thing that I'm like, okay, this is what I want to say. You know, so, and usually, you know, the Walking Dead's a great of an example because usually I find a way to work in the title of the episode into what we're talking about. You know.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that we're making those decisions as the writer of the article for a lot of these places, a lot of these online things. Somebody else is writing the headline.
Or somebody is coming up with the tease on the social media that links back to the article itself.
And periodically you get some author who is just caught all kinds of hell because, and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I didn't write the headline.
Yeah. This is what I called the article when I turned it in. And they sat there and went, oh, that's not cool. I'm going to punch that up. I'm going to make it more exciting.
Yeah. And there are times, I will admit, as the editor, I have done that
to
some headlines in the articles. But at the same time, I'm doing it only to make the headline a little bit more attention-getting, not spoilers.
Right.
You know, in the headline.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what a headline is for. The headline is there to get your attention.
Yeah.
You know, the clickbait thing is taken to an extreme to the point where, like, you know, well, not to mention it's become a cliche.
Yes.
You know, 10 things you won't believe about The Walking Dead, or 5 things you missed in the Star Wars trailer.
We should do a clickbait week.
Oh, God. Nightmare that's going to be.
Clickbait week.
That could be fun.
Like Shark Week.
Exactly.
Right? Everything is clickbait.
Similar, also, too many teeth. Too many teeth.
Well,
probably going to get you killed.
You know, and Shark Week's gotten so completely out of hand now. Anyway.
Well, okay,
but we could do that.
But here's kind of the thing. I think that I think this comes back to the instant 24-hour news cycle instant thing. Remember when the History Channel was a History Channel?
Yeah.
Remember when the Learning Channel was not TLC? It was the Learning Channel. And it was
Do you remember the Nashville Channel?
Oh, sure.
The Nashville Network.
Uh huh. Oh, yeah. Remember MTV that used to have music videos on it? What these guys ran into, what all of them ran into, was the economics of doing a 24-hour channel and 7 days, 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
How do we keep people watching?
You got to keep people watching. You got to keep the money coming in. And what happens is that the model of what they built the station, the network on, quickly hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
MTV could only, people plateaued watching the music videos. So suddenly we got Headbangers Ball, or we got The Real World, or we got, there's no music videos on MTV anymore.
Well, Sci-Fi Channel ran into that.
Exactly.
But it should be noted, and it's interesting to see how, at least for Sci-Fi, it seems to be, I don't want to say that the pendulum is swinging back, but it does seem like there's a turnaround at that network, at least, in terms of the focus of the programming, because you've got new people in charge over there. You know, Bill McGoldrick, and we've talked about this before, Bill McGoldrick has got his marching orders include space dramas and big budget miniseries. So we've got Ascension coming up here pretty soon that's in that same vein of Battlestar Galactica and Dune and Tin Man and all of those. So it's going to be interesting to see how that model, as it were, reasserts itself. Because one of the things that we've talked about doing, and again, this goes back to money and audience numbers more than anything else, is putting video programming online and doing like what Vivo's doing with the MTV model on the internet now,
right?
Doing the same thing with the old Sci-Fi Channel model and putting it on the internet. But it comes down to how many people are going to be watching, because the advertisers are going to want to know what are your numbers,
right?
And what's it going to cost to put the programming on, whether it's original programming or syndicated programming or licensing other stuff or your news programs or whatever.
Sure.
And then you have the other part of that is, well, how much, especially in terms of like the news programs, how much information do we put out there immediately, and how much do we hold back until you have a chance to watch the shows that we're talking about?
Right.
So it's one of those things. Well, like in the podcast where we talk about shows like Level 117 or Rogue's Gallery, we're actually talking about the shows after the episodes have aired, and people have had a chance to watch it. And we even say in the podcast, if you haven't watched the episode yet,
right,
hit pause. Don't listen, because we're going to be talking spoilers. We do the warnings.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe we should do, the more I think about that clickbait week, I keep going back to that. I'm thinking, you know, maybe we should do something like that.
Well, I think you're going to see things like with...
But I think we should out spoilerists. I think that should be a new hashtag, and we find people and we just shame them.
I don't know if that's going to work. But at the same time, I think that, you know, at least some of them are labeling themselves as spoilers. You know, you actually have some websites that are, you know, there's a DoctorWhoSpoilers.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Which doesn't really have much in the way of spoilers, by the way.
Well, and I'm fine. You know, see, the thing that is, though, I think there's two groups.
Mm-hmm.
You have your journalists and bloggers, you know, people like us who get the information. We know what's going to happen. We know the spoilers ahead of time.
Right.
And if we're talking about them in our articles and we do our spoiler warnings and all of that, that's one group.
Sure.
The other group is the group that cannot be contained, cannot be controlled, and that's the group in that's the discussion group. That's the online comment boards,
sure,
and the Twitterverse and all this other social media stuff where you've just got just John Q. Public civilian just reacting. That's the point where this whole thing breaks down, where you're never going to be able to get anybody to
you're not going to
don't put spoilers on if you're not, you know, do it, at least do a warning.
Yeah, well, I think that people who are, and you know, it's
that should be an article. We'll do a spoiler etiquette.
Well, and there's always going to be that person who is just reacting, and they're not maliciously putting out a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going, "Oh my God,
you know
this."
What happened?
Yeah. And you're not going to be able to do anything about that. And honestly, that's a reaction that, you know, if you're making a TV show or a movie or something, you kind of want that. You want that person to have that, you know, moment.
I mean, it does drive the sense of ownership that an audience has, mm-hmm, with the show.
At the same time, though, you have this, again, we're looking at the world. Even just 15 years ago, didn't have that kind of instant.
Well, even 5 years ago. I mean, when did we start live tweeting shows? A year ago? 2 years ago, maybe?
Something like that. I mean,
not us personally, but just as a society.
Right,
part of the collective mind now.
Well, as soon as we had social media, as soon as we had this thing where we were all getting together, and we were all getting together at the same places.
Except we're not really.
Well, I know. But I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you had your bulletin boards for your fans.
Yeah.
You had your okay, this is the Star Trek bulletin board, and this is the football bulletin board, and this is the, you know, the publishing bulletin board, or whatever it is. You know, you had places where you went. So if you got a spoiler there, you're kind of like, well, okay, you know,
yeah,
I'm here. But then we had things like MySpace. Cast your mind back to about 2005.
He brought sexy back, but he couldn't bring MySpace
back.
No,
he couldn't. But it's still alive. It's still out there. It's still a thing.
It's on respirators,
I guess. But the thing is that all of a sudden we were at this. It's a social network,
mm-hmm,
and you have this interaction on a level with strangers that we weren't having. And then, of course, everything became became Facebook, and now we got Twitter and all these different things. You have this kind of thing where all of a sudden you've got a giant audience.
Yeah,
we didn't have an audience like this before. Even when we were doing the bulletin boards, when you were in we're talking the late '90s, early 2000s. You know, the audience was, you know, and sometimes you go, you know, five people are online.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember those days.
Or 100 people are online. You go, ooh, 100 people. And you write something and suddenly you're getting responses. It's like, oh, 100 people actually thought it was cool. Now it's like, 100 people.
Oh, yeah.
What, am I dead?
Yeah, well, you know, and we were talking about our statistics before we started recording and looking at all of our different numbers.
Right.
How different they are,
mm-hmm,
you know, depending on what algorithm is counting what. And I'm looking at it, I was like, 145 page views? That's not a lot. That's not a lot. And then here's this other one, 14,000 impressions. Like, what
does that mean?
What? Wait, what?
It's like, figure out the math here. It says, yeah.
But at the same time, then you've got, you know, Curtis had a tweet that,
yeah,
you know, got picked up by the Walking Dead show,
sure,
account on,
mm-hmm,
Twitter. And then it got retweeted and it got shared and it got put out there. And, you know, 300 likes and 145 favorites and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got so much community response,
mm-hmm,
to just that one thing.
Oh, yeah. And the fun part was watching him.
Yeah. Because
he was just like, what's happening? This is so cool. This is really... And it is neat because
Well, and I was getting the pings, too, because he had put the Sci-Fi for Me account in that tweet.
Well, and
it just blew up.
And
for 2 days. We got stuff yesterday, too.
And it's kind of exciting because you've got, I mean... And interestingly enough, you know, Curtis is an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, when you've been acting, you're very appreciative of your audience.
Yes.
And Twitter, of course, is a different, is just an audience. I mean, it's you're not able to have the kind of connection on with Twitter that you can have on stage, obviously.
Right.
Because you can see your audience. Your audience can see you. You can have that kind of connection in a really way that live theater is very special for.
Unless you have the live theater audience that's holding up their cell phones and taking snap, 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 posted to Instagram.
The very first show I ever did in high school, way back when, was I did Christmas Carol. Played Bob Cratchit. Dinner theater. And we actually did it in the theater department of my high school, which was an amphitheater style. That was the classroom. And so we just put in chairs and the stage and everything, and it was really nice. First show I'd ever done. First real acting, singing, dancing, the whole bit, you know, it's the musical version of A Christmas Carol. Your audience is dinner theater. They're right there. You're almost sitting in their lap.
Yeah.
Flashbulb right in front of my face. I'm not wearing glasses. Folks, I'm really blind. Okay. I've got terrible, terrible vision, and it's always been terrible. Mm. And so not only have I got my glasses off because Bob Cratchit didn't wear my glasses, but I'm blind. And I got to dance out of I got to dance up the amphitheater out the door. And it's like, because, I mean, the flashbulb went right off in my face.
And
so,
now, doubly so.
Doubly so. So I mean, still love the theater. But the thing is that when you're on stage, you have that kind of interaction. You don't get that kind of thing with Twitter, but there's a similar kind of brain chemistry thing going on. They talk about this with your cell phone, and you get an email. You got to look at the email, right? Endorphins. It triggers the endorphins. So Twitter's like
that. No wonder I'm so depressed all the time.
Oh, God. Twitter's like that, too. And so
High school. It's the validation you get in high school by being part of the clique.
Yeah.
You're part of the group.
But the group might be a million strong now, or, you know, and so.
And the problem with that is you get susceptible to the group think.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I use Twitter so rarely. I tweet out, you know, The Walking Dead review, and I tweet out, you know, H2, and I tweet out, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from time to time. And I get this stuff out. I don't even do it consistently because I'm always forgetting Twitter.
Yeah.
Because it's not part of my, you know, we write these articles, and I'll be damned if I can figure out how to write any of the articles that we ever have in 140 characters, you know?
Well, and the other thing is now that we've moved over to our new website.
Yeah.
The tool that we had that would automatically push our articles to the social media, the Twitter and Facebook, that tool is gone now.
Right.
So now it's even doubly on me or whoever to make sure that once this article gets posted, that it gets shared on the social media.
Right.
Because, you know, now how do we get, you know, into... You know, our audience share. How do we get the people to be there and read our stuff?
Not by spoilers, not by giving them spoilers.
No, spoilers are bad.
Well,
unless there is a reason for us to share it,
and you want them,
and we warn them. Yeah,
I mean that's part of the problem, right?
Sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. Like, yeah, I said, that's true. It depends on the product, depends on the story.
Well, you know, I think that if honestly, you know, as it's the Star Wars trailer, okay, you know, as much as the resistance was there, you know, and you held off until you went and saw it in the theater, and you got it on the big screen, and I held off until it hit iTunes because I wasn't able to go to the theater that day.
And I watched the heck out of it when I got home.
Oh, I know. I watched it
all weekend.
Multitudes of times.
Looking for the details.
Sure. And the thing is that we're all going to be really primed for news.
Mm-hmm.
Every little bit. You know, like any little sneak peek.
Yeah.
But remember that when Abrams and Snyder were doing their back and forth for Batman versus Superman and Star Wars, you know, it's like, you know, the little... In jokes were basically, you know, stormtroopers getting arrested or you know.
But when we saw the Millennium Falcon.
We saw the Millennium Falcon.
And there it was. It was like, there
exactly. It is.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just, I mean, it's, we're not going to solve this, I don't know.
I think this actually may be something worth digging into a little bit more. The etiquette of spoilers. How to deal with spoilers, how to react to spoilers. Maybe that's worth an article or two where we discuss spoiler etiquette, because you know the harassment thing is old news.
You know,
Gamergate's old news. Let's come up with a new controversy. Spoilergate, right?
Right.
Yeah. Let's see if we can start a movement. And in the meantime, we're gonna move out and get ready for other things to do this week. If you would like to let your voice be heard, you know, let us know what you think about spoilers or the lack of spoilers. You want them? You don't want them? You like them? You don't like them? Or if you've got suggestions for other topics that we could discuss, you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. And we are also on all of the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr. I think that's it.
That might be it.
Yeah, that's it. Just look for Sci-Fi for Me. And, of course, if you would like to subscribe to our various podcasts, you can find us on iTunes. We're also on Double Twist, OneCast, and Stitcher. And, of course, everything is available over at scififorme.com. That's going to do it for us this week. Yes?
I was going to say, our newly redesigned,
yes.
Bright and shiny, made of candy.
Sci-Fi for Me 3.0 with winky blinky lights.
It has stuff.
And things that move. It's really cool. So,
does it have a machine that goes ping?
They're actually, you know, I think we should probably have something on there. Maybe we'll put that on the 404, you know, the page not found.
There you go.
It'll be a, you know, you made the machine go ping. I think we'll do that.
There we go.
I think that'll
be
fun. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening, folks. Timothy Harvey.
My pleasure.
For everybody here at scififorme.com, I'm Jason Hunt, and we will be back with another edition of H2O next week.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.